Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help. These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're Breaking the Panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel. This is going to be the short show. This is going to be your one-off. What's it called when they put those little Marvel? Is it the one-offs, one-shots? One-shots. This is going to be your one-shot of your podcast this week. So we didn't want to leave you hanging. We wanted to give you something, but it's not a whole lot of news.
Charles.
Yes, sir.
Don't miss your chance to blow. Opportunity only comes once.
I'm the Rock Guy of Podcasting, Charles McFall. And the MC on the mic is none other than Paul Klotz.
Yeah.
That was great. I did not see that coming, man. That was awesome.
No, I'm kidding.
And back, man, I can't, it'll be a couple more weeks before I'm just like, all right, Chris is here. He's stable. Back again this week is Chris. I'm just happy you're home, man.
Yeah, Chris, not pro status wisdom.
I keep kind of wishing he would just like deploy again or something. Like, I don't know.
It's coming, buddy.
I kid.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas is all I'm telling you guys. You have fun. So we have actually got response from last week. Do we want to start with that? Do we want to?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, I understand there might be a few political shots in here. We'll see what happens. But for the gist of it, I know he's responding back to our talk on scalpers. This is our friend Frank from Australia, who is one of the four amazing hosts of Toy Power. That show's got me hooked. Let's talk about that for a second, guys. Chris, have you been listening to Toy Power?
I haven't caught up on the latest episode. Actually, I think I'm two episodes behind. But
So you'll listen to Botched first, is what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
we know where his loyalty lies.
Fair enough. I listen to Botched first, Trivial Warfare second, and then Toy Power is the third on my list. And I travel enough at night to get to my gigs that I go through four or five podcasts a week, easy listening. And Frank and the guys there do an amazing job, and they've won a forever permanent place in my heart, because not only did they name drop Giant Size Team Up, which I love, you know, they dropped that Frank was on the Guardians of the Galaxy panel with us, and I always love when somebody goes back and talks about how they were one of our panels. It's great. It makes my heart feel all warm and gooey. And then I got name checked. It's like, that's how you win. That's how you win. You name check Charles McFall, and we're all good. So I love that show now. But in all seriousness, it's a great show. I've never collected toys as a serious collector. I'd at most be an amateur hobbyist, and I really only like my Cookie Monster collection. And I don't do it for the – do you think those guys do it for the value, for the love?
For the love.
Yeah, okay. So maybe I'm sure. A bottom line.
Like any hobby like that, though, I'm sure there's a certain amount of attention paid towards rare pieces that are going to hold value.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And these guys, they'll talk about how they'll buy it. Some of them buy it. And I'm sorry, guys. I haven't learned all four of your names just to write them off the top of my head. But to be fair, I call Klotz other names sometimes, too, because I don't remember his name half the time. So I do apologize, but, you know, it is what it is. I do know one of them buys two of each. So they'll get one to keep mint in package, one to come out and display on the shelf. Mm-hmm.
They're all Australian, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all live in the same area and all
so
that.
So it's criminal one, criminal two. Criminal
three. So wrong.
Hey, it's Independence Day week. America.
America.
Freedom. Freedom is free.
Oh, that's what I was going to look at. I am going to look this up while we listen to this on Facebook. KCJ in Australia, if you listen to Pokemon Go podcast, he is the famous Australian KCJ that comments all the time, and he tags other shows and this and that and the other. He's been listening to Breaking the Panel, and he had some comments to me. I love when people like him want to do a conversation. And actually, I owe him some tips on starting a podcast, because he shot me some information, and I told him I'd get back to you tomorrow, and that was like 2 days ago. So I'm a bad man that way.
He does a test too, Casey.
This is true. But I'll look at his comments. But this is Frank from Toy Power responding.
Hey, gang. Frank here. So, a couple of things before I start. One, finding out that Chris used to work at a toy store, marry me. Second thing, as for the whole Buffy versus Blade argument, look, they both hunt vampires, but only one of them can do it in a crop top, and only one of them pays their taxes. All right, so this is mainly in response to the chat about scalpers and aftermarket prices and all that from last week's show. There's a couple of issues in play here, so I'm going to try and break it down as best I can. First, let's look at the people who actually practice the art itself, the sellers. Now, if you sell something that is hard to find, regardless of the reasons why, you are entitled to put a percentage on that to make some money. If the demand is there, and you've had the patience to not open your Detective Comics 27 after all these years, then why shouldn't you reap the rewards? Or if it's even selling something on eBay you've had stashed away, or even something you've come across on the cheap and it's worth something, I say go for it. That's what it's there for. Making money on these sorts of sales, obviously, money and the total amount of profit you make is a factor. Selling for less than you bought just doesn't make sense, though that's not to say it doesn't happen at all. The key difference between these sellers and the, in air quotes, scalpers, is the intent. Knowingly clearing store shelves or buying in bulk with the sole purpose of reselling at a grossly inflated price is a pretty scummy practice. Dress it up however you like, but it's ultimately profiteering. And while that sort of thing might fly in the world of big business, individuals who practice this same strategy are not looked upon highly. Just ask your president. Myself, when I sell something, I look at it as this. If I was on the other end of this deal, what would I be prepared to pay? The answer to that question is my sale price. It's when people lose sight of that and go chasing the big dollars that things tend to get messy. Part two, the buyers. There is a mentality out there of, I want this thing so badly. And the scalpers, as opposed to your regular sellers, mind you, the scalpers, they know that. They know it. They bank off of that in every sense of the word. I think it was Paul who made the point that they charge the exorbitant prices they do because people are stupid enough to pay for it.
Yeah.
The old saying of people have more dollars than cents was probably invented by a flippin' scalper. Me, as a middle-class worker living in a far-off magical land with mortgage and bills to pay, I learnt much earlier than most that the Rolling Stones were right. You can't always get what you want. That's a terrible, terrible Mick Jagger accent. I do apologise. But the point stands. But see, now there's a generation out there who were born and raised being told, oh, it's okay, sweetheart, don't listen to Mick Jagger. You can get anything your little heart desires because you are special. If you can dream, you can do it. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Finger snap. Now, born from this comes the sense of entitlement, of ownership, of putting possessions before people. Screw you. Give me what I want. Ha, I'm better than you. And look, now I'm richer too. Personally, that's not my jam. But hey, it works for the White House, doesn't it? Part three, online shopping. Now, the attitudes of both sides of this coin have only been heightened by our good old friend, the internet. In the days before dial-up, there were so many exclusive toys and cool things that I simply never knew about. Now, as the world gets smaller, the market gets tougher, as people have easier and quicker access to products from literally everywhere. These days, you're not just attempting to outbid Jerry from next door at the garage sale on the corner. You're taking on the entire world market in a click fest to see who has the best ping rate and the largest wallets. So let's put all these factors together in a real world example. NECA recently announced an SDCC exclusive 8-pack of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle figures that honestly, they look like they've jumped right off the screen from the vintage cartoon. Talk about knowing your market. These things are gorgeous. But being a con exclusive and being 8 figures all at once, the cost was high. $200 US plus shipping. Oh wait, NECA don't ship outside of the USA. Then you have to convert that to Aussie dollars. If I was to pick up a set, I'm looking at $330 Australian just to get it. Now, thanks to the hype around this set, they literally sold out in under 60 seconds. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. 60 seconds after that, these sets were seen on eBay for upwards of $400 US.
Come on.
Now, my issue behind this whole thing is the intent. There were no doubt an army of people who don't give a crap about the Ninja Turtles as a franchise, waiting to buy as many of these as they could, only to flip it seconds later. For some context, I had 5 separate people attempting to buy on my behalf, 3 of which were located within the US, and all of us missed out. So tell me, why should a greedy Wolf of Wall Street get his hands on this amazing set, make a huge profit from it, while true fans like myself miss out? How do you justify that? How do you sleep at night? I'm sure that the Wolf sleeps just fine on his bed full of money, but shit like this is enough to turn someone off the collecting habit altogether. Now look, is it the end of the world? No. And let's be real, this is a very, very first world problem in the grand scheme of things. But again, much like other parts of life, it comes down to how people choose to deal with other people. There's a reason why many murder mysteries center around money, because it makes people do stupid things. You just have to be at peace with your own intent as either a seller or a buyer and live with that choice. Frank out.
Very well said, Frank. Very well said. Guys, I mean, you got anything? Cause I don't know that. I think he said it all.
My gloves are laced up. I'm ready to go. No. I'm going to call back to one of the arguments I made when we talked about this last week. And I'm going to point to the example he was just given with NECA making this super exclusive Ninja Turtles set. You know what I mean? And I'm going to clarify this a little bit by saying I have experience with NECA because I have experience with HeroClix, who now owns NECA, or is now owned by NECA. The HeroClix community, and one of the reasons why I'm kind of fizzled out on it, we're dealing with the same thing. And I talked about this on the past, it might have been on FTH, it might have been on BTP, but I talked about the fact that, like, at Gen Con, the world's biggest gaming convention, every summer in Indianapolis, Gen Con pushed HeroClix, mostly WizKids specifically, out, saying, you always have this huge issue with your booth, because there's a line, you know, serpentining through the entire convention floor of people who are in line to get these con exclusives. So it's a very similar issue. I'm very familiar with it.
So basically they're saying, because you're blocking the path, because everybody wants what you have, yeah, you can't be here.
It became such a problem that they're like, you can't have a sell booth here. You can have a, you know, a display booth, I think, which I think they decided to opt out of, but like they could have a presentation
But they couldn't do con exclusives.
But they couldn't sell their con exclusives or anything like that. So, you know, and that was because it was causing such a problem. And I'm sure other game companies have done the same thing. But it all revolves around the same issue. And Frank kind of put the onus on the quote-unquote scalpers, which we do absolutely need a better name for these people.
Profiteers is...
Sure. Where I put the onus is on the manufacturer. Because they're ultimately the one that has the most control over this thing. If you frequently are creating con-exclusive products that are selling out in seconds, which NECA is, because you know they have a ton of collectibles and they're doing very well. They're one of the biggest names in the industry right now. Why are you not producing some amount more to meet some of that demand so that this kind of craziness doesn't happen? Because ultimately, all your, you know, from their perspective as a company, yeah, you're selling out, you know, your X number of thousand units, but you're creating a lot of hurt feelings and you're putting a lot of people like myself, like people who are kind of collector, kind of professional, you know, redistributor of collected items. You're putting us in this weird moral gray area where we see an opportunity to make money because something is scarce. And that's kind of when you're not doing a 9-to-5 if you're doing this kind of stuff. It's all about the treasure hunt. You're panning for gold. You know what I mean?
And I do want to, I know Chris keeps queuing up, he wants to say it, but I say sometimes the onus absolutely is on the company. When he says it sells out in how much time?
60 seconds, he said.
60 seconds it sold out. To me, it is on the company to say two per purchase. Mm-hmm. And
sometimes you see stuff like that. Done. With HeroClix, we saw NECA did you could order up to three of any of the con exclusives when they had to start listing them on the website. That's the thing. NECA's solution to not being allowed to sell it at the cons was, well, now we'll just put it on the website, which has had its issues because they get resupplies and all that kind of stuff. But that's getting into minute details. But there were purchase limits. You could buy up to three of each thing the one time that I did buy from them. So, you know, that's a thing.
Chris?
Well, okay. So I guess, again, and I don't want anybody thinking that I don't blame the manufacturers for short runs. Okay. Again, I use the example of a yellow suit Daredevil in the Marvel Legends runs, and I believe those were one in every 30 cases.
Jesus.
It's all about getting that demand, and I understand that portion of it. My problem with that in particular, when we're talking these convention exclusives, is them labeling it a convention exclusive and selling it online, because then it's not a convention exclusive.
Yeah,
you're just slapping SDCC on as a label and calling it a con exclusive. But then I guess, Paul, where is the onus on the on Gen Con for creating that problem as well? Because they had a booth that was doing well, a booth that had lines that was selling, and then they helped create the beast by saying, okay, well, you can't sell here now. So they put it online.
They solved their problem.
Well, that was their problem. That was Gen Con's problem.
Yeah, Gen Con's perspective was WizKids' booth is disrupting our entire convention hall. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so they're like, so no. You know, I mean, I think they, because Gen Con's not in the business of selling con exclusives. They're in the business of hosting the world's biggest game convention. You know what I mean?
But they don't just host the world's biggest game convention without selling space to distributors and things, right? They have to sell floor space, correct?
But the emphasis isn't necessarily on them selling, on them being sales fronts. It's on them being presentation opportunities. It's a trade show, essentially.
I understand, but if you want to...
Because there's a gaming area where there's a vending area and all that kind of stuff in a gaming area, but ultimately they cracked down on them because it was causing all these problems. And I do mean, like, hefty lines, like huge.
I don't doubt that there were lines. I don't know. I'm going to be wrong no matter what I say, so I'm done. I'm out.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where your point you're trying to make, Chris.
Is that my point is it can't always just be if it's a percentage problem, then yes, the bulk of it, the responsibility is on the producers. But when the producers come in as a business and they say, okay, I bought my space at your show to do this that I've done for years, you know, that's how I operate. And now you're going to come in and tell me the business has changed, that I can't do that anymore because you, as the people putting this on, can't expand, can't give me a different space, can't put me in a different part where my lines won't necessarily interfere with your con. You're just saying we can't do these convention exclusives anymore, which help your foot traffic, help sell tickets to your your trade
that's
show.
The issue, though, is it doesn't help the foot traffic. It inhibits it.
Well,
that was their justification for it.
I will see. I get what you're saying, Chris. Where
people go to conventions for exclusives. There are people that buy tickets just to go to get those con exclusives. So telling me that it doesn't help the foot traffic is ridiculous.
Well, it helps the So you are talking about under the same one umbrella. You're talking about two different things here. You're right. Gen Con could easily have done good business, giving them a better space, making them more of a flow. What they did, what it sounds like they did, because we weren't there. I don't know. I'm reading into it. Is every con has to have a fire marshal approved flow. And what they did, instead of putting the work in to say, hey, let's put you somewhere else, because what you're saying is, and I agree with you, it's true, that there are many people go, I'm only going to go to Gen Con so I can go and buy and take my, you know, 10 grand or whatever money I'm going to invest in my business and buy all the exclusives I can get my hands on so I can turn around and resell them. And that gives money to Gen Con because I bought the ticket because of that. Now, instead of working with HeroClix or whoever it is, instead of working with them and giving them a better space, like you're saying, they contributed more to the problem. I'm just going, no, it's just easier for us to say you can't do it. Now, who knows? There might have been other issues. And sometimes these things come down to one guy pissed off another guy behind the scenes. And they don't care how much money they're making. They don't like your face anymore. I mean, it's the Star Wars bar saying, my friend doesn't like your face. You know? So while that might contribute to our overall discussion of the problem, fixing Gen Con won't fix the problem. I mean, the onus is on the scalpers, and it's on the companies that make limited runs. But here's my thing. You can always limit the things. You don't have to go to Gen Con. I can go to Dragon Con and get Gen Con exclusives because somebody went there as a professional reseller, right. Not a scalper, a professional reseller, probably paid $20 per box. He'll come to Dragon Con, they'll be 35 to 40, depending on the demand. Well, he doubled his profit, but still a reasonable profit for a collector.
I disagree with that.
Do you?
I'm in that industry. It's the just because you have a store or a web store or whatever behind your name doesn't make you any different than someone who's just doing it on the side themselves. You're doing the same thing. You're panning for gold by hitting up these spots where you know you're going to find it. You find it, you buy it, and then you market at the price that it'll go at. And a lot of times, especially at shows are the worst. Like cons, things get marked up all the time. Now, if they've got a lot of serious competition, they might not be super marked up, but like if you're talking about like pop vinyls, for example, exclusives mm-hmm. or action figures, stuff like that, I've seen stuff that's $10, $15, $20 higher than eBay because they're happy to prey off people's ignorance. They're hoping that some, you know, either a kid or someone who's just not in the know walks up and is like, I want that Deadpool pop because I like Deadpool. It's right. An exclusive sticker on it. Here's my $60 or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that does happen. And Yeah. I put the onus on the people spending the money. Wow. I mean, I am pissed off. So this all started because I was talking about the Pokemon Go tickets and they went super fast, blah, blah, blah. And then they show up on eBay. And there are predators in the world. And it pisses me off. There's not a whole real legit way to stop it. I mean, some of the solutions we've given help fix it. But Chris is, I forget the exact stance, but he's like the store owner. He's like, don't come rattle in my cage. And he gets pissed off from that stance. Your stance is, you know, make more of them and stop painting for gold as a scalper. My stance is on the people, that kid, that person that goes in. I did the same thing. I went to Dragon Con, went, I just want red Deadpool. That's all I want. Mm-hmm. And I went into Funko Pop store, and there's at least four of them, mm-hmm. if not more, in the shopping area of Dragon Con, four stores. I mean, when I say shopping area, if you've never been to a con, think world's largest flea market full of geeks. Because it's barely enough room for two people to pass in between them, and it's packed. But I went to at least three or four of these places, and they had SDCC exclusive Deadpool with the X-Force suit. And they had, I don't remember it's Gen Con, but another con exclusive that was see-through Deadpool. And it's like, where's the red one? That's all I want is the bait. But that's not a collectible. That's not an exclusive, so it wasn't there. But, yeah, they're putting $30, $40 on these things. I went, I'm not paying that because I don't care. And I put – so for me to balance the two of you, at least – and this is absolutely where I come from – is I'm not going to pay you $500 for tickets to Pokemon Go Fest. I'm not going to pay you $1,200 or more for an Xbox One just because it came out this year because I'm not stupid. I'm with Frank on that. I've got my money, and listening to Toy Power, I hear the plight. They run into it more than we do being in Australia, because not only are they trying to get the collectibles that they love, they have a shipping issue as well. And then they have to be online at 2 in the morning or some craziness, you know, 4 in the morning to get that 60-second window to get in there and get it.
Yeah, Australian collectors definitely face a lot of hurdles compared to a lot of the rest of the world. I mean, there's even a little bit of a struggle, like when something's a North America exclusive for people in Europe or Canada, even sometimes if it's a US exclusive, but there's generally a way for them to solve that problem just by going through somebody else. But with Australia, because of the shipping costs and the taxes and all of that stuff, it's in exchange rates and all of it's really difficult. And I definitely feel for them because it's not made easy for them. Not at all.
No, I agree. Chris, any last words on that one?
Nope.
Chris, it's like, screw all you guys. Everybody's wrong. I'm going to burn this down.
No, that's not it at all. We're just talking in circles. And yeah. We're not, neither one of us is convincing anybody of even, I don't know.
Ultimately, the thing is, all we can really do, right, is talk and then influence ourselves. You know, I don't think any of us is going to go out there and try to get the one thing we want and spend crazy buku money on it. It's stupid. And so it's just part of the world. And you're right, Chris. It's nothing we can solve, and it's going to go around in circles. So here, speaking of Australia, here's another Australian. I called him KCJ. I don't know why. His name is Casey Hancock. And I'll do that too, Casey. I change names, and it happens. But here's what he said to me. And there's two different conversations here, so I'll read it out for you guys so you can know what the conversations are. But he says he's listening to the 4K argument. We're talking about Nintendo making the statement, there's just not a market for 4K, right? That was last week, I believe it was. He goes, reminds me of a story Iwata-san told about the conception of 3DS. They were discussing what to do for the next portable console. The new guy in the room says, what about 3D? And suddenly they realize it's a brilliant idea. The reason they hadn't thought of it was because they tried it for the Virtual Boy and it flopped. They tried again for the GameCube, which I did not know that. And it was 100% 3D TV compatible. In fact, Luigi's Mansion was built from the ground up to be 3D, but nobody owned 3D TVs. In fact, they even considered selling a small 3D screen with each copy of Luigi's Mansion, but the technology was just too dear and rare. And so it goes. They try something ahead of its time, they get burned and cross it off their list forever until somebody who hasn't experienced the burn joins the team with fresh eyes. They just keep avoiding it. Now, the two things I want to address real quick is, when they did the 3D, if they did it at the GameCube, that was way too early, right? 3D TVs were still new, as opposed to 4K TVs are not that new. They've been out for a couple of years. They are just like plasma came out and became the standard, and LED came out, OLED came out, blah, blah, blah came out. You know, our resolution TVs have become thinner and brighter and clearer and better resolution. And so 4K TVs are already a high standard in the market. They'll become the standard, I think, in the next 2 years, because they're already talking about 6 and 10K TVs. So whereas the 3D was, you needed glasses, you needed this, you needed that, it was untried technology. I think GameCube was way early on that. Virtual Boy had the same problem, right? The equipment was way too expensive, and it honestly apparently made people super motion sick. So I get what you're saying, and you're kind of right, Casey, but at the same time, I think the statement of 4K TVs is still off. Chris, I'll let you go first.
I agree with what Casey said.
Nope, you're wrong.
That's what we discussed last week, is that it feels like they've been burned by technology before.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when the Virtual Boy came out, it was what, like 99? I don't think it was over $100 when it came out, so that was a lot for,
but
say,
wasn't it a... That was a lot for a handheld at the time, though.
But it wasn't.
Let me see the release date on this thing.
That would have been in the 90s, dude. Mid-90s?
1995 was when it was released. Okay, but here's the thing about Virtual Boy. Was it a console by itself? Because it's hard to tell.
It sat on a desktop. It had legs and
yeah,
it was
seen
a controller.
The tripod.
And you had to, yeah, it was like a little visor thing that you put on. It was almost a hybrid between a Game Boy and a console, because it wasn't as mobile. It was nowhere near as mobile as a Game Boy.
Right.
But price.
Yeah.
Price wise, and I think maybe you kind of hit it too. Is Nintendo doesn't necessarily. I don't know that Nintendo's ever marketed themselves as the high-end gaming system either.
I would agree with
not
you.
Not only, you know, the family-friendly one, but the affordable one.
Well, I would say Famicom, NES era, they did, because they were at the time.
They were the first to market. But I don't know that they were, I mean, but even at that time, you were spending $40 on a brand new, you know, Atari 2600 cartridge. You know, $40 and up. So that's
God. Do you guys remember when Roses went out of business? Do you even remember Roses department store?
Didn't have them in my area.
Well, we had them, and I was getting Atari cartridges for like a dollar. When you were right, we'd been paying, you know, $25-$30 minimum in the 80s for cartridges. I just remember grabbing those for a dollar. Oh, me and my dad got so many, and he still has all of them. We got so many cartridges.
Yeah, I don't know that Nintendo I don't remember them being so far and above and beyond the price of what was already out on the market. They just had a better product for that price point, and maybe slightly higher. But in today's world, you know, when Xbox and PlayStation come out of the gate costing way more than a Nintendo does when it comes out, let them market to the high end 4K owners. Nintendo doesn't need to. You can and it's going to look fine on last year's TV.
I think Nintendo Mario changed the game. They had a great marketing campaign. Mario was, at the time especially, just a crazy amazing game where you didn't have, I mean, you had Pitfall Harry, but really, is he a character you identify with? You know, he wasn't an icon of Atari. So you didn't really have those characters, and they made it character-based. I think that helped. But then, yeah, I agree with you. After that, it's definitely been, no, we're the family system. We're the Mario system. We're the Star Fox, you know, the cool stuff that nobody else wants to do, we do. But, by the way, Virtual Boy was released in 1995 at
$180. It was $180?
Yep, though slightly less expensive and slightly less powerful than a home console, this was considerably more costly than the Game Boy handheld, with seemingly more advanced graphics. I'm reading from the Wikipedia page. It was not intended to replace the handheld product line, as use of the Virtual Boy required a steady surface and completely blocks players' peripheral vision. So, yeah, that was is $180 when it came out. And, yeah, I don't know. Klotz, thoughts?
You know, what I said last week was I feel like the right play for Nintendo is to keep doing what they're doing, not try to be on the cutting edge of technology, but I don't think it was the right play to call it out and say, like, oh, well, we're not embracing that because nobody cares about it. That's how you make enemies. That's how you draw attention, unnecessary attention to yourself. It's the same thing as what happened with the Xbox One when that was in its first announcements at E3 the year that I think it was 2012, and one of the Microsoft representatives on Twitter went off about, because everybody was pissed off about a couple of things, primarily the always connected to the internet thing, like you would have near zero functionality if you weren't connected, and I think there were a couple other issues, but that was one of the big ones. And one of the Microsoft guys responded on Twitter and just basically implied anyone that wasn't always connected to Wi-Fi when they wanted to play on their Xbox was like a country bumpkin and was like below notice. And it blew up. It hit Reddit. It hit, obviously it was on Twitter. It hit Facebook. All of a sudden, within a couple days, everybody who cared at all about consoles had heard this. And, you know, the guy, you know, made kind of a half-assed apology, and then he disappeared. And, you know, a couple weeks later, they fired him. Like, or they moved him, or, you know, but he's gone. Like, that guy is no longer sitting in the job he was once sitting in because he ran his mouth online. And he made their brand look bad, you know? Yeah. And it's, you can, there are a lot of people out there who've got their kids playing on a regular Wii right now. Like, not a Wii U, but a Wii. Or they've got, you know, an Xbox or an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3. All of those things are plugged into TVs all around this country and other countries that are getting used every day by kids and families, and it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? That they're slightly old technology. As a matter of fact, for some people who are very value-oriented or on a budget, that's a great appeal. You know, the last generation's technology and the low cost associated with picking up games for it and everything. You know, I mean, if you're willing to wait 5-10 years, like right now, PS3 games are the cheapest they'll probably ever be, because I think we're going to hit the other side of the bell curve soon, and they're going to start creeping up as supply dwindles for some of them. But it's like, you know, if you're happy with the quality of the visuals on a PS3, there's so many great games for you to play right now. And you can get them for like 5, 10, maybe 15 or 20 bucks, like, but mostly less than that. And that's just an example. It's like, don't call people out and make them pay attention to you by making them feel inferior, you know? And that's kind of what they were doing in reverse with the 4K thing, is saying like, oh, well, we don't really care about those early adopters. And I think that's a big mistake. And I think, I'll bring up the format war between Blu-ray and HD DVD.
Yeah.
Microsoft played that wrong too. And they like to imply that anybody who thought Blu-ray was the way was like stupid.
And yeah.
They lost hard.
Oh, you remember coming up on the Xbox One, the DRM thing where they basically banned used games, essentially. I mean, that's before they launched. And the immediate response was, oh, no, we're going to burn your crap down.
Yeah, that was the other.
You won't sell a single freaking box if you do that. And, yeah, they had to back off of that fast. And even I was like, how are you so arrogant to think that you're going to force your entire community to buy brand new games when you yourself on your market will discount your digital games. But we have to buy a brand new disc. We have to own a disc. That was a bad move. And I'm glad they fixed it. I'm glad they backed off of that. I think they also said it was never going to be backwards compatible. I was like, no, I can't buy a new system if it's not backwards compatible. I've got too many games that I own or that I still want to play on an Quitty Fingers older system. And I'm not the multi-system guy, just not.
They took a little bit of flack for the not backwards compatible thing. Let's be real, though. PlayStation really established that precedent with the PS2 being backwards compatible. Ultimately, they couldn't stick with it because the big problem with that is it's expensive. The technology that's required, the hardware technology that's required to be able to process both kind of games, it's daunting, and it keeps the price of your system high, which they don't want to do in the long term. Obviously, the first couple years, the price of a new system is going to be high because they have to recoup development cost and all of that. Yeah. I mean, honestly, they lose money on them, but they've got to get something back.
So close to that point, though, I've never been going, oh my god, it's $700 for an Xbox. No, I understand the principle of it's brand spanking new, and it's going to be higher when it first comes out, and there is a lot of technology, and they got to make this technology somewhat future proof for the next 5 to 8 to 10 years. So there's a lot of money that goes into this, and I get that, but at the same time, it's more tech than what my last system had. So why can't you play my stuff? And I think Xbox has turned it around with, now they promote the crap out of it, Games with Gold. And you know what's free to them? Games with Gold. So I don't pay $60. You can find a deal for $40 a year. But my $40 a year is just thrown at them. Mm-hmm. And millions of other players do the same thing, and that's where they recouped a lot of their costs.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is the solution is that you'll have to do a digital remaster and offer it as a download later.
Yeah, and that's fine, because I was willing to wait for that.
It's when you're talking about optical media, though, because the PS3, for example, in order for it to be able to play PS1 and PS2 and PS3 games, it would have to have two or three different lasers in it.
That makes sense.
The older technology, because the new technology is different. You know what I mean? It's set up differently. It's not as simple as just fixing the software side of it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. You know, it's got to be a cost benefit analysis. You know what I mean? But a lot of people do like to hold on to their classic systems. I know you kind of just said that you don't like to, but there's a lot.
Yeah, I know there's a market for it, though.
I mean, I've got a PS1, a PS2, and a PS3, and a PS4 in this house right now. You know, they're not all owned by the same person, but, well, actually, there is a copy that is all owned by the same person, but you know what I mean. It's, those things don't ever really go away unless somebody pawns them off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't typically get rid of my systems either, because I still feel the getting burned by X-Men Legends not being backwards compatible on Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. I got to have my Xbox to play that, so. And Legends too, I believe too. I don't think it's on 360, but
There is that. Definitely, when Xbox says we are going to be backwards compatible, I had to wait to see what games we're going to do. And they said it's coming, and basically they did a digital remaster of the stuff. Now my library, from what I bought on my 360, either that was triggered through disc and said you owned this before, or the few things that I bought digitally. My library is filling up. I mean, it's just every time I go check the ready to download section, I've got more and more games available, and I can only really manage three games at any one time that I'm keeping track of. And quite honestly, I don't even do that very well. So, I totally get old systems being held onto. And quite honestly, when the Xbox 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever the hell they're going to call the next one comes out, and I get it. My son will get my Xbox One, and one of you guys can have my 360. I'll save it for you because I like to hold on to that stuff. No worries. But Casey, you definitely have a point. Chris got you back on that one for sure. Nintendo is not the great breaker of new tech. I honestly like where they are. I like that they're sometimes considerably cheaper. I like that it's an easy to access system for my family to play. My wife hardly touches the Xbox. She hates the controller. She hates how it makes her brain have to figure things out. But she loves being able to pick up the Wii remote. It's super simple, easy to use, and she'll play the crap out of a Mario or a Yoshi game or a Kirby game. It's something that is non-hardcore gamer friendly, and it's just family oriented, fun, you know, good, clean fun, if you want to say it that way, with some challenge. And God, guys, she's a completionist, and it drives me crazy. Because she'll want to get like every last thing on Yoshi, which they make it kind of difficult to do. And I'm like, I don't even want to play the stupid game anymore. Why are we getting this? No, it doesn't get you anything. Why are we getting the last star? Oh, so there is that. Now, the other part of this conversation he wrote, and the way he said it was, I have to say, if Flash is the fastest man alive, Lois Lane is the fastest woman. And he hit send. And I'm like, I take that to mean she gets around. You know what I'm saying? She knew Clark like 3 seconds and it was swipe right or swipe left on dinner, you know. So, what he meant, he followed up a minute later. I don't know how, and this is referring to BVS. I don't know how, but for somebody without powers, she sure gets around fast in Superman and BVS. Also, we have a different rating system for movies in Australia. Deadpool was only rated M16+, not R18+. Most movies are rated M. Only kid cartoons are rated PG, if not G. So obviously PG and G are probably the same rating here. I want to say M16 or M is probably their PG-13. Then they have an M16+, which is our R-ish.
So yeah, it's by 1 year.
Ish. Well, we have an NC-17 where it's like nobody under 17 will be allowed in.
Right, but R is supposed to be the 17 is supposed to be supposed the to, indicator for
unless R, yeah. Unless accompanied by an adult.
Right.
So I'm not sure. But so Deadpool barely rated over M in Australia, apparently. It got the M-16, which is fine, right? I mean, I got to imagine just like NC-17 ratings really kills your box office. I got to imagine an R-18+ probably hurts the box office numbers in Australia. He didn't say if he liked Deadpool, so you know we're on the edge of whether we like Casey or not. Chris, or whoever, actually it could be Klotz, whoever brought in Marvel versus Capcom. Let's talk about that for a minute.
So Marvel versus Capcom is coming out, and I alluded to it last week on the episode as we were rolling out. It's going to be Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, and Paul, you'll probably be able to talk about the controversy better than I, but it seems like there's a pretty even love it or hate it idea or following with this game coming out. Some people are like, yeah, give me some more Marvel versus Capcom, it's been a while. Other people are like, why are you giving me more Marvel versus Capcom, I don't care about this franchise anymore. But the biggest thing about it is there's not going to be X characters in this game. And what I said at the end of the show last week was a direct quote from their producers saying that they didn't think anybody really even remembered X-Men.
Wait, what is that? I hear a scraping of a box? Soap box, perhaps?
No, actually, my nostrils are just flaring.
Oh, no, it's worse.
And I mean, this is almost akin to Nintendo's brush off of the 4K, right? It's just like, why would you ever limit yourself like that?
There are countless flipping articles on the internet, videos on YouTube, lengthy posts on Reddit and forums about the fact that everybody wants to see flipping X-Men in everything, okay?
Yeah.
People are pissed that every game that comes out doesn't have X-Men. People are pissed that we can't see X-Men in the MCU, particularly ones who have been in the Avengers. You know, like, how could you ever say that? And not only that, but they're still making X-Men films, and they're successful. Even if they're not good, they still make money. People still see them. People still talk about them. So it's freaking ludicrous to sit here and try to say that nobody knows or cares about X-Men. Marvel versus Capcom was defined by X-Men. That's yeah. Why people played that game was to play with someone like Blanca fighting Wolverine. Okay?
Real claw.
So yep. No, this is beyond stupid.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the thing is like the progenitor of all of this crap was Children of the Atom, a straight up X-Men fighting game. It wasn't Marvel Superheroes that came after. It wasn't Marvel vs. Capcom that came after. Children of the Atom started all of this. And to say that nobody remembers the X-Men is asinine. It's probably another executive that needs to not be involved in that property anymore.
I mean, you know, the other thing is the Marvel vs. Capcom property is rough. Because the last time around, they put out like three versions of the game in like 2.5 years. And each one of them was a full bang $60. And I think the second two had DLC. Somebody can write in and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not doing my research right now in the middle of this rant. But and I talked about this with a friend of mine who gets them. He likes the fighting games. He gets them and I'm like, don't you think it's a little ridiculous that you buy one of these Marvel versus Capcom games or you buy a Street Fighter game? Because Capcom's really who's at fault here. You know, you buy these games and then, like, a year later, they're putting out another version of the same freaking game with the
Ultimate Edition.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, it's nonsense. It's like, it's as mad as I am about Pokemon right now. I don't know if I've ranted about that yet, but I'm really pissed about Ultra Sun and Moon because they're coming out a year after Sun and Moon came out. A year! A year! A year!
So you're saying that these companies like Capcom that do this, they're the profiteers and scalpers of their own games?
Well, they're doing what. There's a lot of drama in game development right now about the various practices of different studios, right?
And you're going to have to make it quick because our clock is counting down. Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. You know, there's all the complaints about early access. There's complaints about pre-orders. There's complaints about DLC. And, you know, there's people who do it right because we've seen a number of games that have nailed it. You know what I mean? And then there's companies that don't do it right. And then we get tone-deaf statements from executives who are like, oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, like E3, most of the analysis of this year's E3 was like people laughing at how tone-deaf, like, Xbox was, EA was, you know, a number of these different companies about how, like, people were applauding after somebody announced that you were going to be able to pre-order a game, and, like, some, like, Jim Sterling, for example, who's a pretty prominent commentator on games industry stuff, he's like, why are you morons applauding? Why are you applauding for pre-orders? Because all they just told you was that you're going to be able to give them your money ahead of time. Without seeing the game, without seeing gameplay,
yeah,
none of it. Like they're just like, oh, you can give us money without seeing anything, and then we can deliver whatever we want, and you won't be able to get upset. Like No Man's Sky, right?
Yeah,
yeah. No, it's I don't know. It's turning into a war zone out there, and I think if you got your head up your ass collectively as a company, it's just gonna get tougher and tougher for a number of these entities, because it's getting cutthroat, man. And the smaller, the indie or the mid-sized developers are crushing nowadays. They're getting people to turn up in droves for their early access games and their free-to-play games and all that kind of stuff, and the old hats are gonna get left behind if they keep doing stupid stuff. End rant.
All right. So we gotta crack it out here. But I imagine we're going to get some great responses, hopefully, and we'll talk about it more next week if you guys want to bring it up. But quickly, go to podcastawards.com and nominate our show for an award. It's going to be easy. We're going to ask you maybe one at a time. You only have in July to do it. So all you do is go to podcastawards.com. Right there at the top, it says the nominations are open. And it's a clickable link. And then underneath it says, if you already have an account, click here. You do not have an account unless you've already nominated somebody else. So assume if you've done no nominations, you just click that top link. You just put in your name, email address. You will need to verify your email after you make your nominations. But it's a nice drop-down list. We're in TV and entertainment, or TV and movies, rather. And you can just drop down, find Breaking the Panel. Awesome sauce right there. There's gaming that has Pokemon Go and Botched for Giant Size Team Up. There's entertainment that has Blazing Defender Report. And, of course, Rock Out of Podcasting. There's Society and Culture. And you can put anybody you want in People's Choice Award. And all other categories are there. Find shows that you like. Feel free to nominate them. You can go back in. If you do not know a show, you don't have to nominate in that category. And if you learn of a show later you want to put in, that's when you log back in. But just go podcastawards.com, put in your name and email address, put us in TV and movies, And make sure you check your email. Just click the I'm a human button. That's it. We appreciate it. You can email the show, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. Support us at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. And find us on Twitter @panelbreakers. Facebook is Breaking the Panel. Tune in next week to hear Chris say.
I mean, I agree with what Casey said.
Nope, you're wrong.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.